Sue Miller's first novel, The Good Mother, generated a lot of debate about whether it's wise for a single mother to seek a romantic relationship and a fulfilling sex life. The best-selling book was adapted into a film that starred Diane Keaton. Miller's new novel, Family Pictures, is also about domestic life. This time, the key event is the birth of an autistic child. Miller traces how the child, Randall, affects the lives of his parents and siblings over the course of 25 years. Jane Smiley reviewed the book in the New York Times and wrote that Miller's focus on a single family reveals much of what there is to know about the American middle class in the middle of our century. I asked Sue Miller why she writes about families.
I think family life is a point at which everyone perhaps is most vulnerable. It's one of the most dramatic things to write about in some ways, although day-to-day it often seems the most mundane and the most boring. But it's how people get formed and made, and that's something of great interest to a novelist to record and speculate about fictionally.
Let me ask you to do a short reading from your book, and you could set this up if you'd like.
This passage comes about two-thirds of the way through the book. It's one of the three chapters narrated by Nina, one of the children in this family. And she's talking about a point in her growing up when things shifted in her family and when she and her older brother, Mac, in a sense, both embraced a different identity for themselves. When you read about families like ours, where one member is very ill, special, they're sometimes called now, you discover that often when the problem is removed, because the ill person is sent away or dies or gets cured, someone else in the family takes on that role. And maybe that's all it was, that after Randall left, there was suddenly room for Mac and me to go crazy, to be as mad, as bad as we wanted. On the other hand, maybe we were really only angry at my father for leaving us, acting out, as he would say. Or it could have been just that it was the 60s, and there was a perfect congruence between the times, which heaped its praise on acting out, and our lives. Or maybe it was a result of living in Hyde Park, where being troubled or in trouble was equated with being sensitive and bright, where the high premium put on eccentricity drove half the people my age then and later into a kind of wasteful extravagance of personality. But perhaps it was all more elemental than that, hormones only, singing in our blood, driving us to wildness.
When you were shaping the story of this new novel, why did you want to have, in a way, at the center, an autistic child whose presence changes the life of everybody else in the family?
Well, I mean, that's almost the answer to the question itself. If you're writing a book about a family, you need something that changes the lives of everybody else in the family. And I wanted to have something that I could trace over time, so that I didn't want to choose, let's say, an event like the death of one of the children, like the death of one of the parents, which would, the waters would fold over. But I wanted something that would go on making the characters ask questions of themselves over a long period of time, and particularly for the children as they grew and changed and their allegiances in life truly developed, and they were able finally to ask adult questions about what their experience had been like growing up. So there seemed almost a kind of inevitability to choosing something like the presence of Randall in the family in order to do what I wanted to do fictionally.
The perspective shifts in your novel. Sometimes it's Nina speaking, and the passage you read was one of Nina's. But there are other members of the family who give their versions of the story as well. You seem very interested in how family stories compare within the family, how every person has a slightly different perspective on what has happened to the family and what the motivations for each family member have been.
Yeah. And also, I think I was interested in tracing how one person's response becomes part of the dilemma for the next person. I mean, how there's this whole sort of network that develops and is part of everyone else's reality becomes part of the reality for someone else, something that the other must respond to, essentially. And I think that's something that's that's probably gone, generally speaking, from our lives now, and we have so few children. It seems to me one of the remarkable and wonderful things about having a large family is that there's some sort of instructive value in understanding that your perspective is only one of many that could be taken on your parents, on the experience you had growing up. And I think that it's finally, in some ways, I'm sure there are many benefits also to being a single child or one of only two, let's say, but I think one of the real losses in our not having as large families as we used to is that sense that of learning something about the egocentrism of your own perspective on things.
Did your sense of family stories and the function that they serve change from the time you were a child to the time that you were a parent?
That's a really hard question for me to answer since I have only one child, and so his story is the truth as far as he's concerned. I mean, I think that may be in part what has made me interested in that larger family, is the sense that in some way my experience is perhaps a little bit emblematic of the experience of a lot of people. That is, we come from much larger families than we've produced in our own turn. So I'm not sure. I don't really have a sense of how family stories happen now and what they will be like for children when there are only one or two of them.
So there's a sense of if your son is upset by something that he thinks you're responsible for, there's no one to prove him wrong. There's no other child to say, no, that wasn't a problem.
Right.
You're making too much of it.
Right. And he has to struggle with me. I mean, there aren't all alternate versions of his mother for him to look at and think about and to give him some sense of distance from me. I mean, I think it's probably a more difficult thing.
Your novel, A Good Mother, was about a woman who is separated from her husband. She has one child, and she has an affair with another man, and it's a very sexual one. It's one that really arouses her in a way she's never been aroused before. And the book, in a way, raised the question, can a single mother have an imaginative sexual life and remain a responsible mother? At least that's the way that the issue was framed by a lot of people who read it. Was that the question that you wanted to raise?
No. I think that's the question that made it of sort of immediate topical interest to a lot of people who read it. I see the question in both of the novels that I've written as being essentially the same, which is really how do we deal with a difficult, arduous event. In The Good Mother, it was the mother's enforced separation from her child and the sense in which her life was sort of riven at that point. How do we deal with that? What sense do we make of it? Can we, you know, it seemed to me that I was writing a character who in some ways didn't come to grips with a sense of herself, didn't come to understand who she was until that event had happened to her. And in many of the same ways, it seems to me, what I'm doing in this novel, Family Pictures, is exploring the same kind of event among a whole group of people. And for me, both of these sort of surfaces, both of these sets of events, really serve as a kind of metaphor for a sort of spiritual journey that I'm tracing various characters taking. So I see, to me, the discussion that exists sort of at that level is really about the literal surface of the novel, but isn't talking about the novel's intentions or deeper meanings.
Were you satisfied with the movie version of A Good Mother?
I didn't see it, in part because, well, primarily because I happened to see a couple of previews when I was at other films. And it was just such a shocking experience to see a visualized version of what I lived in a certain way in my own mind that I really realized that I didn't want to have that as a kind of film, literally, through which I'd have to forever see my own creation. That I wanted only to think of what I'd made when I thought of the book, and not ever to have a kind of image of what someone else had made of it move across that memory. It seemed to me it might even be, I was actually writing this book still while the movie came out, and I, in some sense or another, thought it might be in some way very dangerous or damaging psychologically and to my own, to myself as a writer, to fool around with that, the way I think about my own work. And I thought at the time, well, maybe after I've finished this, I will, you know, rent the video of it or something. But I really haven't been tempted, and it wasn't a sort of principled stand that I thought ahead of time I would take. It was just something that suddenly seemed impossible and undesirable to do.
Sue Miller is the author of The Good Mother and the new novel, Family Pictures.